good in the committee, right?
The two things that I think the subcommittee looked at was to try and see is there any options to reduce costs. The other is to make them pretty much autonomous. That's why we limited it to 10 lots. And then even at that, it cannot be a through road to serve adjoining properties. So it had to be like a dead-end road into a project. That's the only ones that would qualify for these private streets. So it's pretty much an inbreeding kind of a thing. There's, you know, and I know that breeds insanity, but you know, that's just kind of a desperate super quality.
We are limited to money.
So that was part of it. It was to make sure that these things don't affect adjoining properties. Because that was one of the things that I know when we review subdivisions and partitions, are there adjoining properties that need to be served by a road system? And if that's the case, you don't get to put in a private road system. You've got to go with the public road. The other thing that we haven't talked about much tonight, and I don't know if we got to that, is the small divisions off of DLM and Forest Service Road.
Yeah, we're not there yet. We're still discussing the first one.
The first one, so.
Which is private.
So I just wanted to make that, even though I didn't put in all of the flowery language to deal with everything, if you look at the purpose content of this letter, these are only to be self-contained kind of projects, so it's not going to affect the larger process. One of the things that is going to come up at some point in time, working off of what Ron was saying, as things start to develop, what's the responsibility to the bigger issue? And the problem has been, and I've worked with it at the Merlin Interchange, is they're trying to hit the first one through to make sure that it's all brought up to spec, even though you may have just a little integral addition onto it. Right now, per the state standard, that intersection is failing at the Merlin Interchange. So there are plans that have been developed on how to fix it, what needs to be done, but we need to start looking at that relationship to the overall project. Is the small projects, can they contribute into a fund that will be able to start making those things happen? Because if you take a small project and say, well, I'm just going to add one car. You go, well, it's over standard right now. And you go, but that's a $300,000, to add one signal to try and help fix that. That won't pencil out that I'm only trying to make one lot. So there needs to be some proportional share things that start coming into these things when we start putting all these parts together.
Rob had his hand up and then Cliff. Did you...
Just a hypothetical, I don't know if I'm asking this anybody in particular. So we have a 10-lot subdivision, private road, each up for 10 acres. I go buy all those. I sit on them for 3, 4, 5 years, and I decide I want to go subdivide all those, so I now have a 20-lot subdivision. At what point do we trigger that and say this is no longer meeting the 10-lot max?
When you have the 11th lot.
So we're right back to the issue of saying the one guy, man, I'm going to get hammered.
Well, I guess one of the questions involved is the zoning that's in place now. We've got 2.5 and 5 acre zoning, basically, and we have resource lands. I don't know too many people that are going to come in with a subdivision today in an R5 zone and make 10-acre lots. Unless there's a physical limitation that you can't make smaller lots.
Well, they want to avoid a lot of upfront construction costs on the road. There's always going to be that last guy that gets left on the door. It's going to hurt.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that's where it is now, going from 5 to 10, saying it may be overly restrictive. But when we look in the context of the other jurisdictions around, the 10-acre seems to be more consistent than the 5. The 5 seems overly restrictive.
You're talking about lots.
Yeah, lots.
5 lots.
5 lots as opposed to 10. I don't know of any jurisdiction that's doing like 20 or 30 on these small things, except Douglas County. When you look at theirs, they've got, what, 4 to 15 lots is an 18-foot surface, turnout 7,600 feet. So that's the one that does go over 10 lots, and that would be Douglas County. You know, but the standard we're trying to propose here is what's good for Josephine County. Try and economize. The proposal from the subcommittee was 10 lots.
So can we historically look even at the average size of subdivision and find the sweet spot in lots? Maybe it's 12. I don't know. I'm kind of throwing, I don't know how much leg work that is. Snap your fingers and it just happens.
Mike.
Well, I think I appreciate what Bob is saying. While the language isn't there to describe what circumstances will prohibit the use of private roads because of additional density or development options or through traffic and all that, the kinds of issues you're talking about are what will make that a little difficult to draft and have the language implement something fair. But there is some point where, if I'm understanding this private road option is at least being presented now, is that at some point it's an advantage and at some point it's not an advantage or it won't happen, and then that's when they step up to the standard public road. To, you know, so if that development you're talking about has the density to support 15 lots instead of 10, it may just pencil out to do the standard residential road or whatever the standard is rather than the private road. And go for it. So that option will always be there, but there will always be a limit. Even now in our code, when we do the restricted residential road and there's additional density, we require the base to be there for the road. While they may build a 12 or 13 foot driveway with turnouts and all that, the base is there, and so when the person comes along behind and wants to develop, then they build on that base, but they end up paving it and bringing the whole thing to a county standard. So, you know, the concept that at some point your system is going to not cover every situation or that a property owner won't have to step up and do a public road,
it's always there.
I don't think you can get away with it. How you describe the trip points, how you create the criteria that will intelligently address those situations when they need to pass over into the public road standard system, that's the challenge.
And that's something, you know, I'm trying to help with the system, even though I've been paid for doing it. I can help with the drafting of some of that for something, and I know Michael, he's probably going to look at taking that hat off and saying, you know, it's time to let somebody else do it.
He's going to become a consultant.
Yeah, that's
right. Oh, yeah, right. They'll end up like Bob Hart.
Oh.
That was an inbred joke.
Jack?
I think the financial problem that gets created for the hypothetical speculator is maybe going to show up down the road. I don't think it's relevant to our discussion. You know, the Merlin interchange is failing. The private road serving a maximum of 10 lots would be inadequate if somebody decided they wanted to have 100 lots.
Right.
Well, the issue of how to apportion the cost of making the necessary change to accommodate 100 rather than 10, I don't think that's germane to the question. I don't see it as any different than 5 lots. If you want to change 5 lots to 100 lots, you've got the same identical problem. Mm-hmm. So, I just don't think it's relevant. And it is an altogether different question. I mean, you're getting into SBCs and the whole nine yards.
Yeah, that's what I used on those trips. Well, see, that was exactly where I was going to go to, because if you're, we have to weigh it carefully. I mean, I agree we need some residential roads, and I'm not arguing that point at all, but we have to find that sweet spot, because say we let a 10 in, and then the guy comes out, and then Gordon's got, okay, now he's got 30 acres he wants to subdivide, and now that guy's going to have to eat the whole rest of the road, and proportionally there's going to be a bigger cost on that extension onto that unit. So So where is the break even point where the first set versus the second set being done is gonna pencil out? And that's a question we have to answer, but I think it's something we need to keep in mind.
Kind of answer that 30-acre piece that's adjoining, if it's obvious from the beginning that the only way that that's going to get access is through the instant piece of property, that's when you'll require the public road and the street plug to make sure that that property gets served. Otherwise, he should have another access over here, and he doesn't have to force the access through the public road. So, you know, trying to bring up to standard something else is going to be looked at when you review the subdivision today for that 10 lot. Is it in a situational spatial arrangement with the other lots that there does have to be some other access that's provided? So that's kind of self-curing. It should not be leaving isolated pieces. It's going to put an onerous responsibility on that 30 acres to fix a private road plus do his own interior road.
Okay.
Just a quick comment. The urban growth boundary in Josephine County or around the city of Grants Pass in Josephine County went through that whole process with rural residential rule. And it was one of the jurisdictions that was accepted from the urban reserve, was given an exception to the urban reserve requirement because of the terrain and because of the geography and because of the way that we've developed. Almost all of our rural residential development now is in 5-acre zone. 2.5 acres is out there, but it's a small portion of our residential land base compared to 5 acre. Very little. Our rural residential 1 acre is almost all gone, and it's in and near urbanizing areas where it's already been developed for the most part into 1 acre parcels. And so the 5 acre parcels that we're talking about here in almost all circumstances will be served by these roads, private road systems, will be by definition away from the urban area and will not be interfacing. The 2.5 acres interfaces with Merlin North Valley, for instance, and the city of Grants Pass a bit, the urban growth boundary area, but outside that it's almost all rural residential 5 acre.
Yeah. I'm going to sort of try to wind up on this discussion at this point, and a couple of questions I have. One, should we bring somebody in from the fire folks so they can sort of talk about their feelings in regards to some of the road standards and how it relates to their operation so we get a feel from the professionals? Is that, I see a no, I see a yes.
No,
two no's, a yes, two yeses.
I already know what they're going to say.
I did too. Yeah, well, that was an Ansel system hanging out of every tree.
The bottom line for us when we went through this discussion before is that they wanted us to build freeways, and we said, no, why don't you get some smaller trucks? You're a rural fire department.
We won't invite them. They will have an opportunity to provide input at some point in time because of the process that we have, so that's fine. The other one is we have two subcommittees that have been working on some of their issues, and we need to somehow work them into getting their reports in, and this is going to be a little longer discussion than I thought we were going to have as far as timing. What I'd like to do is probably allow one of the or both subcommittees to get the report in at the next meeting, if possible, which would be in December. Continue our discussion after that on the roads issue, but move from the discussion we've had to move to the next two recommendations, and that's the issue of the Forest Service and BLM roads that we haven't even got into discussion yet, and we need to talk about some of the how we feel on that. Where I'm going to try to get to is that once we've had some of that discussion, we'll go back and look at each one of those recommendations separately and find out where we are as a committee before we take an action. But I think if we can move through each one of these four recommendations, I think it's the five, you know, four, and get the input and then go back and take A, B, C, D and finalize if we can where we want to be on that as a committee. Does that sound okay with you folks? Is there?
I guess the roads committee probably should go through and take all the comments we've made and try to come up with something that's agreeable to everybody and then vote on that, or we could hash this out forever.
Well, no, I understand, yeah. And we're not going to. We're, like I say, this has been a good discussion, right. So we can at least start to formulate the final part of that. And this discussion has been on private roads and restricted roads. And now I want to move at some point over into the next recommendations that they've had and finish up those, and then we can finalize and put a final time frame on it. And like I said, my bet is that hopefully we can do that and finish this off on this discussion by the February meeting. Because we still have a whole bunch of other issues that are out laying out there that need to be dealt with. But would it work for you folks to have the two subcommittees give their report at our next meeting? So we have that on our, at least it's, they've done their work, I'm assuming. Oh, you haven't? Are you not ready?
I'm not ready. No,
okay, scratch.
I'll.
You're going to talk.
Area.
Well, I'm, yeah.
On the deer winter range.
No, we're not there yet.
But plus the committee you're asking about, the one you've got on the agenda.
Two, three. Yeah, two or three. I haven't moved that far yet. I'm wanting to know if that's okay if we start having those committee, somewhere those committee reports.
That's quite my question.
Okay. Okay.
The last meeting, it was stated that this was a tempest in a teapot, that the Deer Winter Range overlay rule has a get-out-of-jail-free card built in, and that it's never a problem. What planning said last time around. And if it's not a problem, why would we waste any time on it?
Well,
I don't remember hearing that.
I don't know where how that conclusion was reached, because I, for instance, Harry Ashley, who I asked to be involved in this, because he is the poster child for it. If he had to get out of jail free card, he would no longer be the poster child. So there are some people that can't find that as an answer.
Yeah, his will not meet the test for the zone change, because it's up on Jack Creek. It's crappy land. The only thing that keeps him from his own change is deer at Abbottstown. And it won't qualify. Period.
Okay, so.
So there is still an issue there, Jack.
Well, I'm just relating to that they said if it didn't qualify this way, you would simply expand the area being contemplated.
You can use both
keep expanding until it meets the rule.
No, it can only expand up to 2 square miles, and if you don't, you try and do it the quick way. Then you try and do it the hard way, and if it doesn't work the hard way, then you lose. It doesn't happen. You can't just keep expanding it. You only go a certain distance to get 2 square miles.
Okay, so where I'm trying to get to is if we can have the two, at least some kind of update on the committee reports for the next meeting. Yeah.
Well, I didn't want to talk until we were,
well, we're not there. Yeah. I'm just trying to get the committee to agree if that's...
But we can't.
We can give you an update.
That's all I'm asking for. That's what I'm asking for. I want us to get some time in on some of this and see where they are. I know that you guys have got your report that you've given us tonight.
Right.
And I'd like us to at least have that.
Thing, and then we'll give you a test first thing in December.
Okay. That would be fine. So what I'm going to do is say we want for the next meeting, rather than continue with our discussion on the road issue, is we'll have the discussion on your subcommittee and an update on yours, and then the next meeting we will continue back into the discussion on the road issues, which will be the item third recommendation and fourth recommended changes for the road folks.
Yeah. We are going to have to move into the deer winter range thing, so you can schedule appropriately. Steve Nima wants to give his presentation on in the January meeting.
Okay, so let's plan that.
And so maybe the meeting that you had hoped for an update, you might discuss the roads. But so anyway, presumably his report will be complete, because had he been able to meet now, he wouldn't have had a complete report. Okay. He'd been able to make a presentation now. So basically, that's the update. Is that he will be coming here to give us his presentation on the January 10th meeting.
Okay.
So we won't be taking up any time on December until January.
Okay.
Right.
So how much time do you think you'll need in the December meeting for your...
3 months.
Okay.
Probably half an hour.
We'll just say 45 minutes to an hour.
Yeah, it's hard to estimate what...
Okay.
How much...
It'll all be...
Any questions?
Okay.
But we did want to make sure that everybody had it now so we have plenty of time to review it and have the questions ready for when we do come.
So let's plan on you having, we'll plan on you having the first hour of the next meeting for that report. And then if we're not going to be using up the rest of it, we'll go back to the discussion on the road issue, and we'll talk about the third recommendation, which is Forest Service and BLM, and have that discussion. And I don't know how long do you think, well, I'm not going to ask for a time on that one.
That one should go fairly quick, because it's either a go or no go.
So let's try to do, let's do the third and the fourth if we can and see where we are in that hour.
Following that discussion, I'll get together with the subcommittee and finalize everything.
Okay. So that's sort of how I think we'll line out the schedule around, at least for the next couple of meetings. Couple of other areas, Turner Scott, I think we'll have to wait on that one right now. I mean, that'll be, it's still on the agenda, but it's going to be not something we get done unless you have something you can give us right away.
Well, as we reported last meeting, it's a solution to the Turner Scott problem, the proposal for a coordination.
Okay.
Which you dropped on me for January.
Okay.
We can be able to handle it all at the same time.
Okay. That'll be good then. Okay, other matters? Any other matters that we have that we need to... And we do have some folks from the public that are here for some specifics. And there is one that came up at the... let me go back to other matters. On Friday the 12th, there will be an opportunity to have a meet and greet with the potential replacement for Mike's position. And I think it's at 10:30.
10:30 to 12.
12 at the Marie Hill Meeting Room, which is the old Washington complex. Is that right?
Right.
And so I would encourage you, if you have an opportunity in that period of time, to go meet them. And what the process is, there's, I believe, four of them?
Three.
And once the folks have done the meet and greet, those candidates are going to be having lunch with the planning staff, I believe, and then... the folks that are at the meet and greet will have some form to fill out to give feedback to the commissioners, and then they will be doing interviewing, as I understand it, in executive session of the three candidates, and so they would like to have the feedback back. So there is an opportunity, that's where I'm getting at, that you have to meet these folks and see who might fit the position that's coming up.
Where's
so
that?
It's called the Marie Hill Meeting Room, but it's the old Washington School Complex on 4th Street. Fourth and C.
It's actually close to the Third Street side. The
It's the old lunch. It's the old lunchroom.
Right.
Yeah.
Where the old lunchroom was, that's what I was
going to
ask.
Yeah.
It's not on the old planning.
No, it's on the other end of the building. Yeah.
And the time?
10:30.
10:30 on County Friday.
Yeah, 12. Okay. Anyway, we do have a couple of citizens, three citizens that are here that I'm going to give you some opportunity. We have a new one. Whatever happened to him? Did he leave? No, he's still here.
The computer's here, but the body's gone.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Before he comes back, Lyle, do you have anything you wanted to bring up?
Well, I'm just learning.
It's Lyle Woodcock. So.
Yeah, I'm just learning.
Okay.
Made a lot of mistakes, I admit it, but my gosh, I can't keep up with the goalpost.
This is nice news.
Yeah. Trainer?
Nothing in particular. I was kind of coming through here wondering.
Okay.
I'm a little nervous.
There is one other thing that did come up at the planning meeting with the Board of Commissioners on Thursday. And I think the board was going to have Mike put together a little presentation or some comments for us at this committee to talk about process and procedures on, what was that, conditional use, the issue on...
There was a time extension on permits that have conditions. I think they set that and directed Mike to go ahead and start on that to extend another 2 years. I don't remember that was something I think the issue that they said would be brought before this committee was that whole issue that I raised on permit land use compatibility statements with...
That's what it was, yeah. So at some point we'll be getting into that discussion on that, on the process and procedure on that issue. Jack?
One other, on the other matters, did we ever get any kind of a response or acknowledgement, HB 2229?
No.
No response?
They, I don't think they've ever sent us a letter on anything, but I don't think they plan on doing anything at this point in time that I'm aware of. They've never sent us a response to our letters, but that's what your question is.
So, in the same regard, then, the counties aren't getting together?
At this point, the way I'm understanding, and it's probably going to come up at their AOC meeting, and the planners are going to be talking about it up there next week, and Eugene, the schedule looks like it's going to wind up being the state will be looking at putting together a committee, which they're by law, but it isn't going to happen until probably in April or May next year. And then that committee has to provide and prepare a set of rules to operate and function by, which probably isn't going to get done till maybe next fall in 2011. Now, what we don't know is whether or not there's going to be any legislative proposals coming in to change or add to that process. I haven't heard or seen any documents specifically related to HB 2229 at this point in time.
I thought also, or I heard, that Jackson County had basically backed out of it and didn't want to carry the ball at this point.
I don't know that they've backed out of anything. They didn't commit to doing anything other than saying we'd like to participate and be involved in it. And that was a response to the DLCD saying we need at least two counties to show an interest for us to even start to generate a discussion. And so I think that's what they did, was provide the letter. And I'm assuming I think they did send the letter, but I think they're concentrating on they being the state of using Deschutes County as sort of a poster child for this. Mike, you may have something.
The part that caught my attention, if I remember right, when that issue came up, was the idea that the administrative rule would have implications for all of us other counties in terms of whether that
regional
is going to be meaningful or not. So on the heels of that, I did contact the planning director in Jackson County, talked to her and said, you know, maybe we could participate in your process to the extent that we would have common interests around the administrative rule adoption, which is what is proposed to happen. And she took that issue to the director of DLCD, Richard Whitman, and he said, no, we're not interested in, we're just going to work with the two counties that, or whatever counties actually agree to enter into the process. They're not interested in doing a hypothetical, I guess is what, and once that happens, they're just going to deal with the two counties. And I think the idea I got back was that their staff is limited, their resources are limited, and they're going to deal with only two counties at once, and that was all part of the bill. But I think that's kind of where it's just sort of
interesting.
Okay.
It's kind of like a quota is going to show up, right?
Okay, Jim. This is Jim Nolan. Do you have anything you'd like to come up as part of our citizen discussion or input?
I guess since the year 2005, and as that reported, you guys were talking about this ordinance. I believe this is when it got finally codified, right? This 76, 62, 92, 100, 200, yeah. 25, the whole shebang. I was there when it was being
formed. Why don't you identify yourself for our record purposes?
Yes, my name is Jim Nolan, resident in O'Brien. Off and on I've gotten involved a little bit with some of these county ordinances to some degree. But ever since the zoning limits on commercial buildings was put on commercial buildings outside of urban growth boundaries, have kind of been my Don Quixote call is to tilt the windmills to point out that I feel personally that is a slam against rural communities that are not incorporated, and specifically in a community such as the Illinois Valley that has lost timber dollars, and our last remaining sawmill is now down to 25 employees. When I first got involved in all this political stuff, I was fighting for their life when they had 300 employees. And that was just in the year 2001. The situation's not getting better.
where's the relief that Kulongowski said he wanted our communities to have autonomy? I don't see it. And then they come down and they force this ordinance on us that limits the size of commercial buildings. When they tell me, well, we want you to develop tourism, and I say, build me a hotel of less than 4,000 square feet and see how successful it's going to be. A destination hotel to go out and take an LSD trip out of another for woods these guys have to look at. So I don't know. It seems to me that it's contradictory to the planning. I know they want to limit growth, but my point is this, is the county has a balancing act. One is that if we don't develop some commercial properties in that area, then the dollars associated with property taxes is reduced. The other side of the threat is that the state will take away some of the centralized planning dollars, or dollars that come down here through the state to the county. And one has to kind of weigh those two out. I don't have the numbers to tell you which way to go, but I totally believe that it's incorrect to limit commercial buildings to that size. And I'm seeking some relief to expand those numbers to something more reasonable, that someone could put a small hotel outside the urban growth boundary area, as an example. So that's my point, and I guess, you know, we'll be open for discussion.
I guess, is the size limitation a statutory, or is that something that the county came up with as a standard?
No, we didn't come up with that.
Remember, these were goals, 1 through 21, and they were suggestions, and the county does not have to take their suggestion, except that there's this force that's applied to you. If you don't do it, then we're going to withhold something from you. And that's where I would say, if we do make a change from 4,000 to go against the state's wishes, then yes, there's going to be hell to pay somewhere. And it's always a calculated risk. So that's here and then my point.
Okay.
Thank you.
So thanks, Jim. So we'll put it on and see what the information is, and somebody will get back to you.
I could point to the sections if you want to later on.
It might be what would be worthwhile is if you could submit something to us in written form. And if you'd get it to the planning department through Ann, that would be great. Mike?
Would the committee want a little description of the issue that he's talking about?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just going to give a little verbal. And Jim, if you want to add anything to it, go right ahead. The work he's referring to were amendments we made to our code with respect to commercial and industrial lands based upon statewide planning goals and rules, administrative rules adopted by LCDC. And it all goes to the issue of there is a policy or perhaps a bias into the land use system, the statewide land use system, that encourages development in urban areas and discourages development in rural areas. And there are lots of rules in the state, but there's no rule or goal that relates to the development or the actualization of rural residential resources, for instance. It's just not there. It's been skipped over. And that's been debated in the past. But in this case, the rule says you have to minimize commercial and industrial development, and it was controlled by administrative rule relating to structure size to keep them rural in size and not urban in size, because urban uses have to occur within urban growth boundaries. And that relates to statewide goal 14 on urban growth boundaries. That's the theory behind it. That's the policy behind it. And it did come down to square footage limitations. We did negotiate a number of exceptions to that, and they're, you can find them in the code in the development standard sections behind the commercial and industrial zones. But we were required to take certain uses out of our zone because the state argued by rule and by argument that they were urban in nature. For instance, motels, there's very definite rules how far you are from urban boundaries, where you are in relationship to highways and then you can have motels or you can't. That's how detailed they are. So it was a matter of trying to comply with that rule. We did negotiate some expansion of their position in the end, but it's still pretty crazy. 4,000 square feet is the largest single structure size that you can have in a commercial zone based on that rule.
Question for you, man. As you know, my parents and I own the Holiday Motel, and we've got 6,800 feet there. If that motel were, or let's say Jim took, you know, like those units that they have over the coast, they look kind of like little cottages, but they're mobiles. Could he set those up as a motel system on his property and still be within the, as long as each building was not over 4,000 square feet? Or is it 4,000 square feet in aggregate per tax lot? That's what I'm asking you.
I believe it's aggregate.
And I think it's aggregate, too.
I'd have to actually look at the rule.
Because we've been worried about that with our own motel at the Burn Down, which Stranger Things probably have happened, but, you know, would we be able to rebuild, you know, if it was down to less than 25% of what was existing?
I can't answer that. Don.
I believe there are exceptions in the in the rule set that allows for variances and stuff. That is, we can go ahead and argue that, but it does leave you set up to be sued or countermanded by a thousand friends of Oregon, whoever their organization wants to challenge you, and then they can point to the law, and then you've got this big cut in your hands. And I'm just saying that the 4,000 to me was too arbitrary, although it may have roots in Senate Bill 101, for instance, or some OER. I would still say that it is so restrictive that no other alternative exists for someone who comes in at first glance. He's going to go away. Yeah. Not that you want more competition, but you may want to expand what you have, or sell to somebody who wants to expand.
Michael, the 4,000 square feet, is that a footprint size or an aggregate size?
You know, that's somebody has the code. I don't have the code.
Right here.
I think James got it. Are you looking at James?
Yeah.
It's right here.
5205. Mm-hmm.
Right here.
There is allowance for 50% increase. But if you're at 6,500 feet already, you're already there.
Well, my suggestion would be is if you could submit something to us in writing, Jim, that would be great. And,
okay.
This would, in my mind, I guess, would require an action at the state level in order to reverse some of the administrative rule in relationship to size. And again, a lot of this is all created for, again, not allowing any kind of industrial or commercial type development in a rural area, but to put it back into rural or into urban area. And none of this was designed with the understanding that we were ever going to go into a negative economy. They were looking at this was going to stop. It doesn't answer. Okay, let's hold up. It doesn't answer the question, I don't think. So I think if we can do some research on that, but if Jim would submit something in writing to us, I'd appreciate that.
New and smaller.
Other issues? We have our next meeting date is set for the 13th of December. Bob?
There was that issue that we had at the planning conference about land use compatibility statements and coordination with that was going to be brought to the...
That's what I was talking about. Yeah, that's what I was asking. Okay. So bring that up.
Okay. The situation that brought this up was I submitted a property line adjustment on behalf of the property owner, and it happens to be on Rogue River Highway. And so it's the access is through state jurisdiction. As part of the approval for the property line adjustment, there was a condition signed saying that you need to get ODOT's approval for your access. It's an existing driveway that already serves existing dwellings. So, dutifully, I marched down to ODOT and took a copy of the county approval and said, here, I want to get my access approval. They said, well, fill out the form. I said, okay, so I filled out the form. And they said, and go get the county to sign this land use compatibility statement, which is part of their paperwork trail. I go, well, here is a signed set of findings that the county said this is approved and it requires a land use compatibility, or it requires that we get ODOT's approval for the driveway. They said, yes, we read that, but still take this form to the county. So I took the form back to the county and walked in the planning office and said, here I need this land use compatibility statement signed. for existing dwellings with a property line adjustment, and they said, okay, that'll be $125, please. Because it's a new application, it's for a land use compatibility statement. And I go, well, you required it, then ODOT just wants this form signed. You know, that doesn't seem to be equitable and fair, and Michael followed correct policy, and they said, we don't have any choice here, we have to charge you, and if you have a question about it, you need to talk to the Board of County Commissioners. So I paid the fee, they signed the form, I took it back to ODOT, submitted it in for them to review it, to do their magic on the access, and went and talked to the Board of County Commissioners, and I said, you know, for 5 or 10 minutes worth of work to put a signature on a form for a condition that the county required to begin with just doesn't seem right. And so they said, well, it doesn't, but it's got to be fair and equitable for everybody. So, well, we'll give you a partial refund, but we're not going to give you all of your money back because the county spent a little bit of time on this. But that was with the provision that we brought those kinds of things back to this committee, saying our land use compatibility statements that are in conjunction with other applications, should those be a separate application that requires a separate fee? So that's something for discussion is, do you think that's reasonable and equitable if there is another application? So, because there are conditions, so I wanted to rebuild my driveway on Rogue River Highway that I wouldn't need county approval, and I went straight to ODOT, and they said, well, go make sure that the county approves of it. So then I'd go to the county, and they'd say, well, we need to make sure that that's a legal lot, that access is okay there. And then they do some research. They charge me $125. You know, that seems okay, I guess. But it's those questions of if it's in conjunction with another application, should the county be requiring a fee for something that they required as part of the original approval? And they'd like you guys to consider it and get back to the board.
Well, I know that development is really slow right now, and they need to self-finance their department, so I think it's fair.
I think what the board has asked is that Mike provide some kind of information to this committee at some point for us to be able to look at it as part of our recommendation to the Board of Commissioners. And it's a procedure process issue, I think, is what we'll be talking about at some point.
That's right. If it gets really slow, it goes to 250. Yeah. We decided.
Okay.
Sorry, Bob, I'm just
set for you.
Bob's coming up, Jack. Yeah,
I got more money anyway. Okay.
Anything else anybody would like to bring up at this point? Staff?
I've had a strange one, and it's a part of the whole road system, and it's about flexibility in the system that just doesn't occur because everybody says, well, show me that standard somewhere, and I'll review it and consider it, and then we'll see if we can solve it. So what we have is one of these isolated cases in an RR1 zone. State statute says you can't create 1 acre lots in an RR1 zone anymore. It's got to be at least 2 acres. It's out here off of South River Road. You've got 5 lots on an existing restricted residential road. There's 6 acres right here. So under the current zoning requirements, most of these people can get 3 lots. But it happens that this is not a nice rectangular piece of property.
How can they get 3 lots?
It's an RR1 zone, but you can get 2 acre lots out of it. So you have an existing road here, a wide flag lot here, and we filed and asked that we put in a road here to serve this property and create it into 3 lots. And they go, no, we can't have these 2 roads here and have that
no man's land in between. So we said, okay, how about we connect them together, but this area right in here happens to be a big swale. It's a drainage, and to serve the existing house here, we have a paved access that is equivalent to restricted residential road. They said, you can't use this driveway. What you need to do is come fill this in and make a full two-lane road here instead of trying to loop it through. You know, it just seems, it's one of those strange things that if you look at it, you go out and look at the piece of property, it makes sense to come in and do just a loop-through road system. But there's no standard for that anywhere. And to try and fill in this drainage, because this drainage not only serves these lots, but it comes across the road from over here, and you got a major kind of drainage way going through there. And so if you've got to fill it and put in a pipe and then pave on top of it, it's just extraordinarily difficult. But Public Works says, well, show me someplace that there's a standard to do that, because here, the center line between the roads, you're not going to get a 250-foot separation between the two. So they say you can't put those two roads that close together. And, you know, from a practical standpoint, the loop-through road of a U-shaped street, you know, makes sense. But from a standards, nobody envisions something like this ever happening. You go, how do you deal with it? Because there is no provision that we've been able to explore that would come up with a variance to allow us to deal with something like that.
Could you take the road on your right and curve it into the road on your left down near the paving of the main road? No, the other one. Well, either one, yeah. Just have them connect together where you don't have two roads accessing your collector.
Well, have it here?
Yeah.
Well, no, they want just a two-lane road. And you can't put two lanes on this side or this side.
Why can't you have another intersection down near the bottom? So I'm not saying.
Well, an intersection here?
Yeah.
You have one access there.
One access for the whole thing. It could be two lanes for the first 100 feet or 50 feet or something.
Would you recommend something like that?
On my feet if he says yes.
So my understanding is the requirement is that there should only be one access point onto the county public road. So if there were two drives that came down to the right-of-way line and then became one at the county's right-of-way.
But they won't allow the two streets that are separated.
But are they private driveways, private road?
It's a public dedicated road. It's a restricted residential road.
Is this the oldest one?
Yeah, it's Doris Osis.
What did you say? Who?
Osis. We've been going around for 3 years, probably.
Mm-hmm.
I know the name.
What's the difference between that and a boulevard where you've got a median? You don't call it the same street. Give it one access. And
there's no standard in any code that I can take the Public Works and say, here, this is where it's been done someplace else. So they don't have the flexibility to say, it just makes sense, even though it doesn't make a standard. Because, you know, if we could blend these to one access here and, you know, build one loop here and have, you know, the two sides here, you know, practically, because of the topography, it would probably work, but they're not going to accept that. We've tried just about every option possible to come up with a solution other than filling in the center and putting in a two-lane road.
Call it a loop road. Call it the same street.
Jack?
That's the inflexibility of the system.
I don't see this on a divided highway.
That's what I was saying.
199 is, you know, two lanes this way, two lanes that way, and a giant culvert in between.
You've still got a restricted residential road serving more than five lots.
Yeah, because it's connected here.
Right out of both streets. And I'm not quite, the last meeting we had,
the applicant basically said, shine it, it's not worth it. So I'm not sure if you're looking at, we're not going to grant a variance or something here tonight. I'm not sure any of this even remotely ties into the charge of the night. I'm not saying it's be honest.
Well, no,
sure.
It's the whole thing with roads and trying to come up with standards.
Right.
And is there enough flexibility in the system to deal with some of these oddball things? And my position is right now the answer is no.
Right.
There is no flexibility in the system to be able to deal with something like this.
Yeah.
And so is there something that we can explore to provide some flexibility to give Public Works, you know, because they have their traffic manual that says, here's the standards, here's what you've got to do. And I look through there and I go, here's the hierarchy, here's the county standard, here's the ODOT standard, here's the ASHTO standard. And it doesn't show anywhere, but it doesn't deal with this kind of a
anomaly.
But wouldn't a restricted residential road that carries 10 lots solve the problem?
Yep.
Because Doris says that those other people didn't want her on their road.
Yeah.
And that's what put the kibosh.
And you can't have a restriction. I mean, unless we change things, you can't
have what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm saying the flexibility.
So the other alternative is just to take the existing road up to county's
existing, right. She didn't want to do that.
If they would let her update her driveway, but then there was not the separation between the roads, and when I talked to Chuck, he said, fill in the center. That's the only way you can get it happen, because we're not going to put that right next to an existing roadway of having another roadway that doesn't meet full standards. So it's just kind of... So if we get the 10-acre thing, there may be some flexibility,
I mean,
or the 10-lot limitation.
Right.
But I'm just saying the system breaks down when you don't have enough flexibility to deal with some different situations.
Yeah, Don has a point here.
And then actually, Mike's got his hand up.
Question for Rob. Within the context of the standards you deal with, is there absolutely no room for administrative decision?
I don't know how hard it's been pushed. I think our fear would be after this, the next person comes in and says, we've got five laws on the other side. I think that's our fear, is the slippery slope. But quite honestly, could an administrative call me on something like that? I suppose it could. It's just then the what if that happens with the next one.
Well, what if it might happen 100 years from now, but... The point I'm trying to make is that I cannot believe in all of the legislation and the rules and regulations that we're governed by, there's not enough flexibility for a public works director to make an administrative decision on something that's this obviously amuck. Seems to me like it ought to be there.
Well, I think if we're getting that meta with the whole argument, I'm not going to do it. I'm not a licensed engineer, so I have a county engineer who's going to put a stamp on the line. If a wreck happens there and somebody dies, and yes, this is the one in a million, he's not going to stamp it, and I'm not going to make it. So that's the other piece.
Well, I can understand that very well. However, the point remains that all the rules and regulations are not meant to be in concrete. They're rules and guidelines that we follow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Seems to me like this is an administrative decision rather than a regulation decision.
Well, but to be fair, I mean, we've been gone through this, again, as a builder with building officials in the county. We've had various building officials in the county, and more so in the city, where we've had the extremes between a building official who is confident enough to look at the code and go, well, okay, this is the letter of the law, but I know what's going on here. In this situation, I feel confident enough that I'm going to say, yes, I'm going to interpret it this way, or I'm going to say... But to be fair to Rob and people like him, they've got to be backed up by the politician. And so, you know, it's one thing to say, well, I feel confident to make this call, whether you're a building official or a planner or something like that, but you've got to know that somebody's got your back. And that's for instance, at the city, I won't go there at the county because the county has been much better, but at the city, we had a building official up until, you know, 3 or 4 years ago who was extremely good and confident enough to make calls on minor issues. And we're not talking about major life safety issues. But he eventually parted company with the city, mutually agreed to, because his higher-ups and the political part of the process wouldn't back him up. And if you know, not so much that it actually came to it, but knowing that if it ever did come to it, they wouldn't say to them, "Well, yeah, you made a call at the time based on your knowledge, and we're going to back you up." So that's I think what Rob's saying is that yeah, it may be a 1 in a million chance, but unless everybody agrees to the fact that we're going to use common sense, then those people that are going to, the first ones that are going to get dumped on if something goes wrong, are going to say, no, you know, I'm not going there.
But that's one of the reasons you have created these positions, to take that risk.
Well, I agree.
Did you have your hand up?
I did.
Did you take it back then?
I would just remind everybody that you know, that's the problem with regulations, is that regulations say something, and if it doesn't build in discretion, there's a place where it comes to an end, and the answer is no. And the chore at that point is to decide how to change the regulations, which I think kind of leads us to your role here today. But I can tell you, in the politics and the public forum, if you're going to make an exception for someone, you better have a procedure and a process that authorizes you to do that, or you're giving favors and you're treating people differently. And I tell you, that will come back to haunt you. And the Board of County Commissioners do not want to be faced with those situations where one of their administrators or their directors has been making exceptions for people, because there are people out there, and pretty soon it looks like a pattern in practice unless you have the regulations to back you up. And so that is a drama and one of the pains of public service is that you can't...
You know, I was a city manager for 10 years. I don't know if you all knew that. And let me tell you, these types of things come up every day in a city manager's life. And previous to that, I was an assistant city manager. I've seen them happen. But at some point, we as administrators had to make a decision and suffer the political consequences of a decision which was right, even though it couldn't be supported.
I can offer you a couple of comments from my past experience. We did have situations, and it was in the planning office, it was before Mike was a planning director, but where issues would come up and common sense would tell you this is ought to happen, and the staff felt that it ought to happen, but they were not comfortable from the standpoint of where the regulation read, and the particular person at that time, what he would do would prepare a memo indicating what the issue was and get the Board of County Commissioners to approve it, which took the pressure off of that staff person and provided them with that opportunity so that, one, they didn't have to fear repercussions from up above and down, because sometimes what can happen is if you don't feel good and comfortable with the people that are up above, it makes it very difficult to make those kinds of...
Well, normally if you're in that position, you already have a head count of who's going to be on your side.
Exactly, yeah. But anyway, that was a way that was resolved so a lot of the issues back several years before you were put in the position. But it worked. As long as the commissioners were aware of what the situation was and were willing to sign on in a public meeting so that it wasn't something that was just done behind the door. Trenor, and then Jim, and then Jack.
I'm wondering if a variance would have been a pathway that might have worked. I mean, it's not as simple as it used to be, but isn't this...
Not in this case, because the variance is built into the planning process. But the variance that would be needed would be to the public works process.
Design modification, we have that process.
Okay. Jim, Nolan?
My question is a little off statement or off subject here, but one of the reasons I came here this evening was to talk or ask if this body had anything to do with the travel management plans that they might use the United States Forest Service in this area or not. Or is this another, should I take this, that question to another venue? There's an issue here with RS 2477 roads, which are, in a sense, de facto county roads. And right now, they're closing these things down in record.
mouse, and I don't think anybody's watching what's going on. And what I'm having to find out is when and where do I...
I think that issue probably would come up with the Natural Resources Committee that's been formed for them to talk on that issue, because that's resource related.
When do they meet?
I don't know the schedule on that. We can get it. You can get it to probably the commissioner's office. Linda or one of those, I think, has the schedule for them, because none of the people here probably are involved.
Well, when I heard of worlds where you're talking about today, I wasn't sure.
Yeah,
this was
Did you have your hand?
Well, I was just going to say, if the committee would like, I can certainly provide the OAR. It's 820-020 that talks about the professional engineering conduct, and that's where the other rub gets to be. Is you're asking a licensed engineer in the state of Oregon to make a call that's against AASHTO standards or whatever else, potentially creating a liable situation. So if he doesn't make that call, then the board has to transfer that risk to someone else or take it upon himself, and that's the rub.
To see that regulation.
What was it again?
It's an OAR. It's 820-something, where it talks about the various types of conduct. An applicant shall not...
Could you give that to her, and then she could get it out to the committee members? Malcolm?
Yeah, Rob, at one of our planning commission meetings about a year or a year and a half ago, somebody from Public Works, I think it was Chuck, I'm not positive, it's been too long ago, but he said ash straight, so they're not cast in concrete.
Right, I just think the fact that it's so widely used and accepted, going against them is, waving red flag in front of a bold commission. Yeah, I'll get that.
Okay, we got to cover. We have to cover at least two more minutes before we have to return. So, so I give that time to our lawyer.
How many of these lawsuits have we had?
I'm sure there's some far between.
Probably none that I'm aware of.
Each one is going to put a stamp on the line, or a politician is going to tell you that.
I've heard a great deal of anxiety about these lawsuits, and I'm wondering how many are out there.
Yeah, I think that's the wrong question. From not being a lawyer sitting down here, so, well, we haven't had any, so we ought to go ahead, is kind of the implication I'm reading from that. But I think that's backwards.
Well, I don't believe in writing an encyclopedia of regulations over something that could happen.
Well, and if I may, in the Planning Commission, we have to have... we have them certified now that they're licensed in the state and they have the backing of their profession in order to testify before us with full knowledge, and that we can accept that knowledge as
they're actually testimony.
Right. So if we're doing that in the planning, I'm certainly going to expect more than that in the stamp.
I wasn't asking about the guy's credentials, the engineer's credentials. I'm asking about how often does this lawsuit that we're showing all the angst about ever show up?
I think that risk is going to be then transferred to the board, because effectively when the rubber hits the road, they're going to say, we're looking at the county engineer's recommendation, we're choosing to ignore it, grant this variance based on that. The county engineer has got his disclaimer in there. If something happened, it would fall back on the county and the governing body.
Time to wake up.
Okay, we have 30 seconds.
I think, for Rob's purposes, the best example of that would be on the Redwood Highway, where there was that subdivision was allowed by Kurt Chapman, and now they've got the center median in there where that family was killed, and it had to fall back on somebody's shoulders, either ODOT, their engineering staff, whatever. And then shortly thereafter is when they made all those changes on the Redwood Highway. Am I correct?
I believe so.
Yeah. And I can't remember what the name of that road is that comes down, but it was a major lawsuit on that particular one.
Fallon
Creek.
No. He's talking further west.
Past the college.
Yeah.
Just past the college. But, I mean, that was the last big lawsuit thing that I can remember. But it wasn't the county. It was the state. ODOT really got into it on that one.
Okay. We're out of time. We're adjourned.
I think you need...